I actually don't know if and how people can join. So, like, as you can see, I'm not very good at this, but I am trying to make a run of doing these Circle live Q&As, switching over the venue that I used to do to Facebook. So, for those of you not familiar, I would record a weekly Q&A, usually generally via Facebook live stream, where I'd take a question from the backlog of either my old reader questions or things that I've been asked in the community and answer that question. I'd do it in Facebook Live. Dump that to Camtasia, prep it, and then like put it up on our Hit Subscribe YouTube channel. So I'm intending to do the same thing here if I'm able to, although I'm not doing this on my phone. This is on a webcam, so the quality might not be as good. I don't know. We'll get it figured out, I suppose. I have some notes up here. This is a question that somebody's asked me. Let me see here. What questions should you ask clients during discovery? I'm guessing you mean prospects. So let's take it as what questions should you ask your prospects during discovery? And I'll dive into that. And by the way, this is a new venue and background. You probably haven't seen this one before. We just relocated after 6 weeks in South Padre Island. We are now in sunny Tampa, Florida. The date of recording is March 17th. Happy St. Patrick's Day. And we will be here for 7 weeks or so. Basically, through right around Memorial Day, we'll be here in Tampa. So this is a third bedroom in the house that I've appropriated into my office. That's why you see the bed in the background. So anyway, with all that, come to think of it, pretty boring housekeeping out of the way. Let's get into the question, which is, what questions should you ask clients, I'm assuming prospects, during discovery? So to tackle that subject, I think you'd kind of have to think through like what are you trying to discover during your discovery process, or maybe like even to back up a little, like what do we mean by discovery? Some of you might not be familiar with that, especially if you come from the salaried world, you're starting to freelance for the first time. Maybe you're used to thinking of discovery, or I'm sorry, as like client onboarding, client acquisition processes being they like conduct a job interview with you. So what do we mean by discovery? Briefly speaking, a discovery call or a discovery meeting is something that you're going to do to listen to what the client is proposing, what they're asking you to do, et cetera, where you're kind of doing a meeting and you're trying to figure out what is it they're looking for? Am I able to help? If so, how can I help, et cetera? So this is generally a term of art in the industry, especially in like custom app dev, for the discovery being you're discovering more information about what they're proposing and how they're proposing that you work together, what they could use help with. So in terms of what you ought to be asking during this stage, that's really going to depend largely on how well defined your offering is and kind of how experienced you are, and so on and so forth. Because if they're coming to you and they're saying, I need somebody to mow my lawn, you probably don't really need to ask all of that many questions. You can probably just look at that and say, like, well, no, I'm trying to do custom app dev. I'm not mowing lawns, so never mind. And even if you were mowing lawns, it's probably not all that many questions to ask, like, am I bringing the mower or are you? I don't know. I don't mow people's lawns for a living. But the point is, if it's a very like well-defined thing, there might not be a whole lot of discovery to do versus if they're coming to you and saying, hey, can you help me like make more money? You're probably going to need to get to the bottom of like what is actually being proposed, what kind of work you can do, et cetera. So it can really run the gamut. What you want to ask during discovery is going to be fairly subject to the nature of what you're doing, how experienced you are, how tightly defined the scope is, like, are you doing a productized service? And by the way, I had kind of alluded to earlier, if you're not familiar with the idea of doing discovery, you might be going through like an interview that they're doing where you're a staff augmentation like contractor. Number one, if you're doing that, try to get away from doing that and have a more like you should be defining your sales process and your customer onboarding process and all that instead of letting clients define it. Also, it's generally not the best if you're being treated as almost like a job applicant because that's suggestive that you don't really have a business per se. You're just kind of a different flavor of employee. All of that said, if they are interviewing you, in a sense, that's a form of discovery. It's just that they're very much scripting the discovery and they're very much framing this as they're evaluating you So the only like discovery questions you would ask in that context would be when they're like, by the way, do you have any questions for me? And you're like, all right, how can I show that I'm smart and I've done my homework? This isn't what you want to be doing if if you have your own business and you're doing discovery. When you have your own business or your own practice, this isn't a formality. It's not an opportunity to show Amazon that you've really like looked into the particulars of whatever algorithm, blah, blah, blah. Like you really want to be determining, should I take on this business or not? And weird as that may sound, if you're inexperienced, it really isn't. So like to go back to this stupid lawn mowing example, imagine that somebody calls you up and says, hey, can you mow my lawn? And you run a big like, riding mower or tractor thing that you mow lawns with. You may have a few questions for them, like, is your lawn entirely covered in trees? Et cetera. Like, you'd probably want to ascertain certain things. And you may get somebody, if they were dictating, it's like, all right, I want you to come over and mow my lawn, but I want you to use, an X-Acto knife that I have, in the drawer. It's so like, even though this is a well-defined, well-solved problem on your end, there can be weird things that people might want from you that would cause you to say, whoa, no, I'm not doing that. You're out of your mind. So that's kind of what we're talking about here. So in the app dev world, it might be that somebody calls you up and says, I want to pay you to write some software, and you think like, great, that's what I do. I write software. But then it turns out what they really mean is that they want to pay you $100 to build a custom website so that they can show off photos of their grandkids or something. And so they're scoping out what would be tens of thousands of dollars of work. It probably shouldn't be done in the first place because it already exists in the form of like an easily, available SaaS or whatever. And there's all kinds of misalignment. So you, as the freelancer, as the service provider, want to be identifying situations like that and avoiding them. So think of this as disqualifying business that's a bad fit. Discovery at its core is really about, I'm going to try to better understand what it is you're trying to do. And then I'm going to determine whether, number one, I want to do it. Number two, whether it makes sense for someone to do it or not, whether it makes sense for me to do it. There's a lot of kind of inherent qualification slash disqualification that you want to be doing so that your life isn't miserable or that you're like doing work for free or whatever. So, what kind of questions should you ask? I've made a list here, and I thought maybe the easiest way to kind of wade into this water would be to talk about some of the discovery questions that I ask for a hit subscriber, at least that I used to. I don't do our sales anymore. So, Sherry, who does sales now, I don't know exactly what she's asking, but for a long time when I was, for the most part, doing hit subscribe sales, walk through some of the common questions that I would ask clients or prospects. And the I guess the reasoning behind some of them, and all, this is to bear in mind when I talked about your discovery process, depending on how like well scoped and well defined things are. With hit subscribe, that's on the fairly well defined end of the spectrum. Hit subscribe is a productized service that sells a very like clear offering, content. Now the content may be spec'd a little bit differently in terms of things like whose name is on the piece of content, how long is it. What's the revision model of the content, et cetera. So there are variables there, but we're not talking about inventing the wheel every time we're having a discovery call. The general shape of this is, hey, we want content for a blog or a site. Can you help with that? So bear in mind as I'm going through these discovery questions that these are on the fairly well-defined end of the spectrum. So one of the first things I would generally ask is, how did you hear about us? The reason I would ask something like this is it's going to be something that you can feed back into your business. So number one, it kind of helps set the stage. If it's a referral from like a good close personal friend, you might behave a little differently than if it's just somebody that like Googled you and is peppering you with questions. So it can inform the discussion, but it's also valuable data for how are you coming to have sales conversations? If you hear a few different times that somebody heard about you from such and such, you might want to reach out to that person and give them a thank you, or do some introspection about like, wow, it seems like we get referrals when X, Y, and Z are true. So that's a good, it's kind of a good icebreaker too. It sets context, it gives you a little bit of information, and it's going to be valuable to feedback into your sales process. Now, I should also bear in mind, this isn't really a discovery, or I should also mention, this isn't really a discovery question, but one of the things I like to do at the beginning of a sales call is tee it up so that the person can talk if they want and say something like, tell me a little bit about yourself, what you're doing, et cetera. that's kind of icebreaker-ish, but one of the things that I found makes sales calls tend to go pretty well is give the person that you're talking to the opportunity to kind of dump their bucket and talk about the things that they want to talk about as much as they want. And that puts you in a mode of, I'm listening, trying to help you solve your problems. And it lets them kind of lower their own defenses versus if they got on the call with you and you were like, let me tell you all about why you should give me money. That kind of raises people's guard because they think you're trying to sell them stuff. So, ask a few open-ended questions, let them talk as much as they want. For people that are bigger believers in small talk, I've found that that kind of gives them the opportunity to talk about the weather as much as they might want or as little as they might want before diving in, instead of you guessing at how much small talk they prefer and, them being annoyed by you talking their ear off about the weather. So anyway, that's a good one. It's not really a discovery question, but it is something I recommend. I also then like to ease in with the question, what's prompting this call? So there might be any number of reasons that people reach out to you. This open-ended one kind of lets them either dive into their problem or lets them kind of talk about like what's been going on in their world, et cetera. So what's prompting this call will kind of nudge them to the point of like, why are they calling you? And then there's this kind of triad of questions that Jonathan Stark talks about a lot, and I fully agree with and have been using in discovery for years. And that's kind of like, I think he says, why this, why now, why us? And that's where you start to get into, true kind of disqualification. I also like to pair that. I don't know if this is one that Jonathan throws out there, but it's kind of, what have you tried already? So these questions, what have you tried so far? Why are you calling me? Maybe I'm expensive or maybe I'm this or that. Why me? Why do we have to do this now? Why not just not do it? What you're really doing is almost like you're discovering information, but you're discovering what sense of urgency this means for the client. Like, what is their pain? Why do this? And you're letting them almost talk themselves into working with you, which is valuable, number one, for the power dynamics in the conversation subtly, but number two, it's valuable for identifying something that isn't a waste of time. So for instance, like let's say you're doing custom app dev and somebody calls you and says, I want you to come in and do some customization to our WordPress. And you say something like, why not just have one of your engineers on staff do that? It doesn't seem like a super hard thing for them to do. If that person is then like, gosh, I never thought of that. Yeah, let me go do that. Sorry, never mind. You could view that as lost business, but I view that as saving yourself a huge headache. Because imagine that they engage you to do that and you roll up your sleeves and you get started. Now you've got an engineer on their side that maybe takes notice of this and is like, why are you paying someone to do this? This guy, like you could find yourself in this quagmire because the client has effectively hired you when they shouldn't. It doesn't make any sense for them to hire you, and that's not the stuff good engagements are made of. So basically what we're doing with this style of question is making sure that the customer has done some form of diligence and they're not doing something stupid by bringing you in. And this does have the kind of jujitsu effect as you get them to kind of justify reaching out to you. You're overcoming all potential objections about the proposal you're, going to write or send them. So another thing that I like to kind of get at, this is a question that you might ask about an engagement. I like to ask this with hit subscribe, is it sounds almost adversarial, but it's kind of a rhetorical question. It's like, all right, let's do some role playing. The thing I often say is like, I have a long history of management consulting. So pardon me if I kind of ask these questions in blunt fashion. You get to do this when you're new or on discovery, but like, let's say for instance, or let's say that this thing you're trying to do, nobody does it. Who cares? Right. So you're calling us up. You want to produce content on your blog. What if you just don't produce content on your blog? Is the world going to end? What's the urgency? What does it matter? Now, what you're doing here is maybe even a little bit more jujitsu, but you're trying to get to some sort of sense of urgency. If nobody has any sense of urgency, if what they're saying is like, well, I guess it wouldn't really matter, but like, we probably ought to have content on the blog. Number one, it kind of indicates that you probably don't have buy-in from a higher authority, which is something maybe for another video. But number two, it sets the groundwork for a lot of ghosting and wasted time in the sales and onboarding process. If they're telling you up front that there's absolutely no urgency to this project, it isn't super likely that after you hang up the call and then you come back and you're like, hey, here's my proposal, that they're going to be like, all right, let's get right on that. I mean, they have effectively told you, eh, whatever. So to me, something I'll actually say on the call is like, well, all right, it doesn't sound like this is actually that important. You know, why don't we check in 3 months and maybe it will be by then. It avoids wasting your time. You don't want to create a whole custom proposal for somebody that's effectively told you that this project isn't important. Now, from the discovery perspective, what's the urgency? Why is this important? That's actually helpful information, because what it's going to do is start to let you get a glimpse into maybe the profit motive. So for HitSubscribe's clients, like, why is the blog important right now? A lot of times we'll hear something like, well, we're going to be looking to raise another round of funding in 9 to 12 months. And so we need to demonstrate that we have the capability to really build a lot of traffic to the site. So we need to get going right now, because it takes a while to build traffic through search engines. So we want to get going now so that in 6 months we can demonstrate to prospective investors that we're going to be able to bring lots more traffic in when we're raising another round of funding. That's pretty urgent, right? You have a fairly tight time window to do that. The fate of your next round of funding, like, there's significant money at play. So, hey, I'm pretty convinced there's a reason to do this. I think you're going to follow up. I think you're going to be interested and engaged in this project. Good. So ascertaining that not only like lets you either, you know, it just lets you disqualify tire kickers, but it also lets you start thinking in terms of like pricing in your pitch about like what actually matters to them. Because, like, you know, having a blog post on the site doesn't matter to anybody. In the end, what matters is we need to bring a lot of people to the site, because that's going to help us raise funding, or we need to bring in a lot of leads. So you want to really be, if at all possible, driving at what's really motivating this from a profit perspective. Another thing that I ask is kind of a two-sided question. I mean, it would be like two separate questions, but number one, I'll say like, what does a home run look like? And number two, what does a faceplant look like? So let's say that we engage, or let's say that you engage with somebody comparable to me, like you're running an RFP or whatever. You engage with someone like me, and, you know, let's look at it a year from now and imagine that it's just been a meteoric success. We're writing a case study together about how great this is. Take me through that. What does that look like? What does an absolute home run look like? And then on the flip side, let's say that instead of me, you go with the competition and it's just an absolute nightmare, a face plant. Like, it couldn't have gone worse. Walk me through those two different scenarios. This is another form of discovery that starts to get at, like, what are they really trying to do? Now, if they say things like, well, gosh, I don't know, I've never really thought about that, to the home run, it's kind of a flag. Like, they don't have a great idea of what success looks like. What you're really looking for is somebody that's like, oh, you know, we've put like X, Y, and Z up on the website and we've doubled our revenue. If they're really specific, if they can envision that, that's a good sign. If they're like, gosh, I don't know, we're just doing stuff. Funding for, we're just kind of doing stuff may well dry up long before you expect it, and you might be right back to looking for work. So you want to ascertain that they have a clear vision for success, and also that they have a clear vision for failure, that they can articulate what the risks are, both the risks to the project going poorly and badly spent money, but also to the risk of doing nothing, again, to like get it that there is some sense of urgency here. Speaking of success, we really probably want to focus on that more than on failure. You just kind of want to get an idea of that. But another set of things that I like to ask is, what are we measuring to indicate success? So what is, you know, forget qualifying success, quantify it. You know, are we looking to increase revenue? Are we looking to bring your cost down? What does that look like? And then, you know, what KPI are we putting on it to measure it? And then, you know, maybe a more brown belt type of question is, okay, so we're measuring your revenue. We're going to do some things to your site, and that should, you know, increase traffic, which increases revenue. Great. What are leading indicators of success? So we're trying to get an idea for how much the client has thought through this. If we're going to do stuff for 6 months, and then at the end of that 6 months, we push something live on the site and, hey, more revenue. Well, you don't know about anything for 6 months. That's a long time not to have any indicators of success. So you want to ascertain what the client is thinking of in terms of, like, in the meantime, like, how will we know, leading indicators, if you don't know, mean like signs that you're seeing ahead of an effort that indicate the effort will be successful. So you want to be identifying, like, what are early signs of success that we can be looking for or course correct if we don't see. Just speaking in these terms, just asking these questions will do two things. number one, it will impress the clients because surprisingly few people that do service providing ever bother to care about why someone's paying them with their hourly rate or whatever. So it's impressive. And number two, it will help you write much more effective proposals because you're going to take all this information and feed it back into a proposal where it's like, hey, this is pretty urgent. You said so yourself. There's your next round of funding is at play. In order to get to that round of funding, we need to do X, Y, and Z. Here are the leading indicators of success. Here's kind of a roadmap, what I propose that we get started. So those are really good questions, at least that I pull from the world of Hit Subscribe to ask. While I'm still on the stream here, I don't have an exact target for the length of these streams, but let me mention maybe some questions that I would, beyond the kind of ones that I ask for Hit Subscribe that are probably, you know, more universally relevant. Like I'm not talking about like content specifics, but going beyond that, what, like, let's say you threw me back into the world of custom app dev, what are some things that I would ask that you could maybe take away to ask in your discovery as well that are not related to Hit Subscribe in any way? Well, I guess this one kind of is, but one would be, why are you outsourcing this? So imagine you're doing freelance application development. Presumably the organization that's paying you to do this probably has in-house engineers. Why not have them do it? I think that's a great thing to get out of the way because it gives you ammunition and things to think about. So the answer to that might be, we don't have the budget to hire another full-time staff member, or we view this as a pretty temporary assignment, or nobody on our staff knows PHP. Whatever the case may be, that's valuable information for you to have because it helps you put something together. And by the way, when you write a proposal for custom app dev, you're probably talking about at least $10,000 in revenue that it's going to cost or that is going to come into you, $10,000 plus in cost for the client. That's the kind of expense that doesn't just get signed off or swiped with a credit card. There are going to be multiple people reviewing your proposal. So it might be that Director Dave is the one who's going out and talking to you about this, but needs to get sign off from CIO Cindy. And CIO Cindy might be like, Dave, what are you doing? We have people on staff, you know. So asking these questions can help, even if the person you're talking to hasn't thought of these, somebody else in the org will. It can help you avoid wasting time where you write this whole proposal for Dave only for Cindy to come along when it's time to sign off and be like, what are you doing, Dave? We have people in house. No, stop. I would also kind of refine that question, assuming they have in-house engineers, you know, part and parcel with the why outsource, it would be like, you know, what are you looking for from me that your staff can't provide? Another one would be to get kind of explicit and say, like, are you talking to me about staff augmentation, or is there a clearly defined kind of scope and project that we want to be doing here? Now, it might be clear from, you know, the way they reach out to you what they have in mind. If they're like, yeah, we want you to build a website, then yeah, you're not talking about staff aug. But there can be things that kind of walk the line where a company's like, hey, I see that you're a talented whatever, you know, let's talk. I've got some work to be done. Are we talking about you kind of coming on in an indefinite capacity and just doing miscellaneous app dev tasks, or do they have a clear timeline or a clear scope for you to be doing? You want that defined up front, because if it's clear scope or clear project, you want to know when you're going to have to look for work again. Another thing that I would ask, just kind of getting back into this world, is am I bringing my own tools to bear here, or are you providing them? You know, are you going to give me a company provided laptop with an IDE and the whole nine yards, or are you looking for me to bring all that stuff along with me? That will affect how you write the proposal, because if they're not supplying you with stuff, you're going to want to bake your cost into the proposal. A lot of times you hear hourly work referred to as time and materials. There are not a whole lot of materials in custom app dev, but these are materials. So if they're saying, we want you to come in and work on our ASP MVC application. Oh, and by the way, we're not providing you with Visual Studio or whatever else you need to develop this, then you should write a proposal that makes it explicit that if you have tools that you have to go out and buy for the sake of doing the work, you're going to pass that cost on to them as the materials. One of the things that I would definitely ask if you're going to be plugged into a group, or kind of like if they're, you know, supplying you with materials, you're going to go on site or you're going to work in their world, I would ask what the pain points that their engineers suffer from are and whether those would apply to you. So are you going to work at, you know, Gigantor Bank Incorporated, where they have a net nanny and you're not allowed to go on a Stack Overflow and you have to use this, you know, stodgy old brick of a laptop? So get things like that established up front, because number one, you might want to price that in for pain and suffering, but number two, you might want to use it to set expectations on the project. If, for instance, you have to come into this on-site where you can't use Stack Overflow and they have a really slow build and all this type of stuff, then you're going to want to set expectations like, yeah, I can come do this work for you, but you're tying two legs and a hand behind my back, so I'm not going to move very fast. So that's good to establish in discovery. Another thing that I would ask for about in custom app dev is basically who is the single point of sign off for decisions related to my contract or engagement. excuse me. I can speak from experience on any number of fronts when it comes to services. You don't want three different bosses. You don't want somebody telling you to do X and to use these tools only for somebody else to come along and say, no, that's wrong. And for you to say, hey guys, I don't know which one of you to listen to. That's bad when you're an employee. It's worse when you're a consultant or a contractor. Excuse me. So I would definitely try to get to the point where there's only one person that's signing off on things. Borrowing from Hit Subscribe, I think the success question is valid. Like, what does success for this look like and how will you measure it? If you want to dip your toes into the waters of value pricing, eventually you're going to need to be asking these questions, but it's just a good heads up thing to know. What are we doing here? Like, if you're going to bring me in, what does success look like if I've been working here for 6 months? Am I riding off into the sunset having built you a site? Let's talk about that. And then finally, I guess the other, the maybe the last thing I'd throw in there for consideration speaks to the idea of value pricing, but it's just a good thing to know for you as a service provider is what's the profit motive here? So, like, okay, you're bringing me in to do X, Y, and Z. Setting that aside before we get into the database schema and all this type of stuff that we might talk through. What's the business driver? Like, am I put me on the map? Is the thing I'm going to do here going to help you increase your revenue? Is it going to save cost in some capacity? How is my effort in any way being tied to the business's profitability? Now, if you're just doing kind of like staff augmentation or something and they can't answer that, at a big enough company, you honestly might be talking to some director that's like, I honestly don't know the answer to this question, or it's so abstract and tied through so many things that I really can't get there. That's not a deal breaker, but it's good for you to know that. It's going to help focus your efforts and it's going to help, keep your eyes on the prize. And kind of what I'm getting at is like, let's say they're bringing you in because you, in your background, are pretty good at like, ORM performance management, database performance, or something. They're going to plug you in as a team member, but knowing that you have this specialty. And the reason they're bringing you in particular is that their like e-commerce application, its performance problems are creating, lost revenue potential. Okay, there's True North. Now, out 3, 5 months in, there you are writing some code in the ORM and you're arguing with some enterprise architect about the best way to like document code and what kind of linter to use and whether you should do tabs or spaces. Now you can pull back, look at your original proposal that you wrote up and say, guys, I get that this is all toweringly important to someone or another, but you brought me in to help with performance because it's costing you money that the database is slow. Is this linter, is tabs versus spaces going to move the needle here? I don't think it is. So let's stay focused. It can like let you get above the fray, keep an eye on the business, maintain your kind of integrity, independence as a service provider, and kind of avoid like nonsense, on site or in dealing with the customer on the project. So this is a pretty lengthy stream here, at least as far as the video is concerned. So I guess I'm going to wrap. I don't know that I have any grand like summary to do here, but hopefully that's helpful and interesting. I don't think there are any like definitive questions to ask, so please definitely take this through the realm of like, in my experience, that's kind of a subset, maybe like the core basis of discovery questions that I ask. I guess one takeaway I would say is this. Over the course of time, build out kind of a list, like almost a spreadsheet or something of discovery questions that you may ask. And then what I would do is going into any discovery call, let the context inform which of these questions you bring along. And then you'll also probably have specific questions for that client. If it was like a former boss that referred the client to you, you might, you know, I mean, this is stupid, but you might be like, how's old Steve doing anyway? You know, you're not going to ask that of every client that comes in. So what I would suggest is that you build out kind of a core set of discovery questions that you'll mostly ask at every call, and then have a few that are maybe a little more off the beaten path that you might layer in. And then also bear in mind that you're probably going to situationally think of a few as you get ready for a call. And before any discovery call or discovery meeting, I would definitely suggest doing some upfront diligence. It's not so much interview style to show that, like, you know, I've really studied you or whatever, but you want to come to a meeting not having done absolutely no legwork. And this isn't to like show how hard you try. It's because you're having a meeting to determine whether or not you should be working with a particular client. Going into that meeting having done no diligence whatsoever is just sloppy. You definitely want to go into that meeting for your own sake, having some opinion as to whether or not this is likely to work out. And that's going to like inform the call and the questions that you ask and make the whole thing as productive as it can be. So hopefully all of this helps. I don't know if anybody's tried to join this. I don't know how Circle's live streaming works, but I will get this. And I actually don't know if anyone's watching this or not. They'll get this dumped to a video and sooner or later uploaded somewhere. And I'll let you know where I do that. So if anybody is watching, thanks for watching and talk soon.